Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners and macabre murders from across the centuries and creating curious cocktails inspired by the desert we dwell. And it's episode 148.
Yes, it is.
148.
How very exciting.
So close to 150.
Very nearly 150.
Very close.
That's a bit mad.
Ooh, very close to season four.
That's even madder.
Who would have thunk it?
Who would have thunk it?
How are you, Nick?
I'm all right.
Yeah, all right.
Singing along. Singing along. Moving on.
Great. Moving on rapidly. It's been a week, hasn't
it? It's been a week. We're not going to get into the
We're not going to get into it. I will say I'm in tremendous pain because my back seized up again. So if I scream suddenly during this podcast, because that's what we're doing, then it's not because of the horror.
Not because of the horror.
I'll work it in.
Okay,
I'll
good. It in. Just time it well.
Any poisonings this week?
Not yet.
Not yet. You're building up a list.
I really am. There's a list going.
Soon, people.
Soon there'll be news from Canterbury.
Yeah, and my back is poisoning the rest of my body. Speaking of mysterious grievances that we all have on this show, I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Thank you very much for joining us, Miss Jones.
Miss Jones, you are a wonder. You're a marvel. Thank you to everyone who has joined us on Patreon and people who have upgraded as well to the Cyanide Connoisseurs and been enjoying the delights of the Case Files of PC Morris. It was fun this month.
They're always mad.
The people laughing. There was just one line which will give you a hint and also no hint whatsoever as to what we were talking about, going, someone just wrote, I'm dying over the pants eating breathalyzer test.
Yes, it took me a while to realize that one. Oh, yes.
Took me a while to work out what was going on during the story. But yes, that's the madness.
Jolly fun.
That the Cyanide Connoisseurs get from the PC Morris Files every single month, as well as a little gift packs, a new batch coming out very soon. Well, Nick, are you ready?
Oh, yes.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison.
Oh, yes.
I think it's important I keep drinking.
I think it's probably very wise.
There is something pinging right now in my lower lumbar, and I'm not happy about it. Or we could drink poison and talk about cocktails.
I think it's important we carry on with the drinking.
We'll go with the first one. Hooray, hooray, hooray. It is Nick's story this week, and we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavour our cocktail of the week. Nick's story. Nick's pick.
Yes.
And the secret ingredient is...
is New Orleans.
New Orleans.
Yeah.
Nice. Now we've danced in New Orleans before.
We've done a few. Yeah,
we've done a few. So we've had some of the classic cocktails associated there.
We've Sazeracked it.
Oh, we did. Oh, that was.
That's one of the ultimate New Orleans cocktails.
We did a variant on a Sazerac as well.
Multiple things.
Chocolatey.
We did a chocolatey Sazerac. Yeah, absolutely.
But New Orleans, I'm wondering what is left.
Well. This is a classic, an absolute classic.
Okay.
Classic.
More classic than the first cocktail?
Yeah, pretty
ever
much.
Made?
Yeah,
oh,
more
okay.
Classic. And also, reportedly, one of the most difficult cocktails to make. And I'm really not sure why I've given myself this to do, but I really want to try and make it. So we are making a Ramos Gin Fizz.
Okay.
I will explain more later.
I... We should have filmed this one because it's hilarious with me being crippled. But also the look on Nick's face, the various difficulties he's experiencing, but also just the look of just, I've done this to myself.
Why have I done this?
I hate me.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been watching YouTube videos all week and there's people going, oh, it's taken me 400 attempts to get this right. And I've never made one before in my life.
And you chose this week.
And I chose this week.
You chose this week to do it.
Yeah.
When you don't have enough stress going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought, let's make things more painful.
I love it. I am in need of something. So I think it is high time for us to sashay into the poisoner's cabinet kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
Well, Nick, what an adventure that
was.
What
an adventure that was.
I've been sitting here for 3 hours alone.
I told you it was a complicated one.
It was. I was. Nick just shut the door and just said, amuse yourself. I'm like playing with my phone. And then it was like, Nick's shaking. And then I was like, there's been a good 5 minutes has gone by and Nick is still shaking.
And he's still shaking.
You have presented me with a, is it a highball? Is this a highball glass?
It is a highball glass, yes, indeed.
But with a concoction of creamy whitiness, but then with a big foamy head that towers above the glass.
And that's one thing I wasn't sure if it was going to do. Hey. Actually get it to go.
It's really good.
To go above the glass.
I'm fascinated.
I got slightly carried away and it's gone slightly lopsided.
Yeah, you tried to do more
and
it's now sort of a Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Should have left it.
Lovely. And I got the big one with the straw in it and I don't know what to do with this. Right. It looks amazing.
So yeah, this is the Ramos Gin Fizz.
Yeah, and it's very white. Huh? Yeah, it's very pure white, but you can see the different layers in it. Mm. Okay. I'm gonna try some of the foaminess. Oh, that's tart. Oh, that's tart and lovely. Mm. I've only just had some of the foam. All right, well, should we dive in?
Yeah.
All right, Merry Christmas.
Mm-hmm. Merry Christmas.
Ooh. Oh, that's delicious.
That's quite good.
Ooh. Ooh. The flavours, Nick. The flavours.
So many flavours.
Flavour town.
Layers of flavours.
This is great because it's kind of like a snack. So I'm like,
yeah.
It's like a 99.
And it's also very good to get on your nose as well.
Yeah. Oh, look, I'm adorable. No, I don't like that. It's difficult to drink.
It is difficult to drink.
You've got this big foamy head and then you've got the liquid underneath. But I'm getting citrus.
Mm.
I'm getting a sweetness, a creaminess.
Mm.
Not much alcohol, which I'm worried about. Which means it's a dangerous one. This is incredible. And well, kudos to you.
I'm pleased how that one came out, actually.
You did it.
Yeah,
mate.
I did it. And it's yeah, so this is an absolute classic. This goes back to 1888.
Seriously?
This was first made by Henry Ramos at his bar in New Orleans in 1888.
Mm-hmm.
This one, so it's an absolute classic.
Okay, so it doesn't seem like the easiest of drinks to make.
Am I to guess what's in it? Go for it. Absolutely.
Okay. Gin.
There's gin in it.
So it's a fizz.
Yeah.
Egg white?
Yep.
Egg white. So with the... I'm doing well.
You're doing well so far.
Lemon. Way.
Yep.
Okay. So with the fizz, though, is it champagne?
It's not. No.
Sparkling water?
It's soda water.
Soda water. Yep. Okay. Sugar?
Yeah, there's a bit of sugar in there.
A bit of sugar. But what else?
You have got lime. There's lemon and lime.
Oh, nice.
In there for citrus. There is heavy cream, double cream.
Oh, okay. Nice.
In there as well. And a little bit of orange blossom water.
You took it from your laundry room.
Which I actually had in the cupboard.
Oh, you would. You bloody well would, wouldn't you? Oh, I'm sure I should have said cream because it has a creaminess to it. But we so rarely use cream.
Well, indeed. Yeah. Gin is the only alcohol in this. So it's not a particularly strong one, but it's one I have wanted to try for a while, just because it is so bizarre to make.
But what makes it so bizarre to make?
Well, it's not bizarre. It's just very labor intensive to make.
Okay.
So yeah, so you've got your gin, lemon juice, lime juice, sugar syrup, egg white, cream, orange blossom, all shaken up, and it needs a long shake to it. So you shake it with your ice, you strain out the ice, and then you shake it without the ice.
Yeah.
On that one. So this time, I shook that, tried to go for about 5 minutes. And that's a long time shaking.
That was a long time.
it's bloody exhausting. And then you strain your ice out and then you shake it again for a few minutes without the ice.
Bloody hell.
Then you pour it into your glasses. Then you have to put your glasses in the fridge because then it has to set. So then it sort of, it creates those layers. Because when you pour it, it's all emulsified.
Yeah.
But when you leave it for about 3-4 minutes or so in the fridge, it then forms the layers where you have your foamy top bit and your liquid underneath. And once you've done that, you can poke a little hole in the top of the foam and you sort of funnel soda water down the center, which then lifts the foamy bit up and sort of makes it stick out from a top from above the glass. And if you shake it enough, it will hold its form and go up like a souffle. If you haven't, then it will just go
just flop over the side.
But this one worked, but it's just very labor intensive. The original recipe, because this proved to be an absolutely huge hit in New Orleans at the time. It was massive. He had 20 barmen making this drink.
Wow.
And each one, he said, you had to shake for 12 minutes. Each drink was shaken for 12 minutes. And they actually had rows of barmen doing like chain gangs. So one would shake one for a couple of minutes, and then it will pass to the next one who was shaking for another couple of minutes, and then passed. So they didn't all get entirely knackered just doing one for 12 minutes. And they ended up having sort of shaker boys, who were literally young lads who were just there to shake cocktails. So your barman would pour your ingredients and all your quantities and stuff like that, and then hand it off to a shaker boy whose job it was to stand there and shake cocktails for 12 hours a day.
I like the efficiency behind that. That's quite good.
But 12 minutes to shake a cocktail, man, that's a bloody long time.
I guess if you pass it along the line and you're making enough that it's your signature drink.
I mean, that's the only thing they made was just the Ramos gin. People came in for that drink.
So, yeah. Well, that is amazing. It's good to have a classic.
Yeah, no, I'm pleased with that.
Yeah. Well done, Nick.
Hurrah for me.
If you failed, this would all be very, very sad.
It'd be very sad. After all of that, you know, no.
Yes, well, with our Ramos gin fizzes. Firmly in hand, fizzing away. As we stroll down the streets of New Orleans.
Yes, indeed.
It's time for a story.
It's certainly time for a story.
Hooray!
Absolutely. So in the world of true crime, there are sort of trio of women who are portrayed as this sort of axis of evil, really.
Right, okay.
The worst of the worst. The most terrifying women in history. Blood Countess, Elizabeth Bathory, we've covered her already. The Russian sadist, Dalia Sotchkova, we've covered her. And today I have the third for you. Third of the trio of horror. This is the story of Madame Delphine Lalaurie.
Yay!
The monster of Royal Street.
Marvellous. Oh, it has been a while. We have been waiting for Delphine.
So Delphine Lalaurie has been made even more famous in recent years by her appearance in American Horror Story.
Yes,
she has. So, with a absolutely terrifying and amazing Kathy Bates. But the lines between sort of fact and fiction are more blurred than in any other case I've researched.
Okay.
At all. There is no doubt that she was not a nice woman. But are all the stories that have been attributed to her actually true? Is she as bad as she is portrayed to be?
Yes. No.
So, well, we'll start out with what we do know for certain. So Delphine Lalaurie was born Marie-Delphine McCarthy on the 19th of March, 1787. Now, she was one of five children to Louis and Marie-Jean McCarthy. Mm-hmm. Now, the McCarthy line was already well established in Louisiana. It was Delphine's grandparents who had originally come across from Europe around 1730-ish or so. Now, the family is very well established. They're very wealthy. They're very influential. Her uncle, Esteban Rodriguez Miro, was governor of the colony at the time. One of her cousins went on to become mayor of New Orleans, and the others are merchants and army officers and all sorts of fancy, important and rich people.
Just think fancy. I shall, and I will.
So Delphine and her siblings have an incredibly privileged upbringing, as you might imagine. Her family is involved in property, agriculture, and of course, slavery. This is the late 18th century. This is the absolute peak of the Atlantic slave trade, really, around this sort of time.
Let's just take it as read.
Indeed.
It flew back then.
It really did.
It was fine. It's not, but it was.
At the time, it would have been entirely normal, as Delphine grew up with slaves around the house, on all her family's plantations and farms and things like that. It was an entirely common place. However, a few years prior to Delphine's birth, one of her other uncles had actually been killed during a revolt at his plantation. There had been an uprising by the slave population, and yeah, they had killed the master. So it's quite likely that, especially in the McCarthy household, that it was drilled into all the children how important it was to discipline wayward slaves. Otherwise, they're going to get you like they got your uncle. You need to be strict. You need to be firm. You have to be watchful for any signs of disquiet or disloyalty. And it was really drilled in from a young age.
Okay.
Now, as Delphine grew, she was considered quite the beauty. And her parents have a queue of suitors lining up outside the door for her hand.
Ooh, nice. Okay.
Now, the lucky groom chosen for Delphine was Don Ramon de Lopez y Anguilo.
Nice. Yep. Good name.
Very good name. Very
he just
good
said
name.
His name when he turned up and they went, you're hired.
You're hired. Absolutely.
I'm not applying for a job. It doesn't matter. It's a job to deal with her.
Now, he is a senior Spanish officer.
You don't say.
Yep. Surprisingly. And they think, oh yes, he's very fancy. And the pair are married in 1800. Now, Delphine is 14 at the time. Well, as was the style of the time. It was entirely common to be married at such an age. But then not long after the marriage, Don Ramon is named as Consul General of Louisiana. So he has now the highest,
bloody
most...
Hell.
Yeah, exactly. He is the top dog. And Delphine is sort of thrust. She's suddenly one of the most powerful women in the entire state because of who her husband is.
You have to look back on, you know, the horror of the fact that, you know, oh yeah, you were 14 when you were married off. Okay, that happened. And then suddenly you're the fanciest woman in the whole of Louisiana. And you're like, you're 15. You're just like, ooh, okay. Yeah. I do not have any training for this whatsoever. But, are there boys?
But she can do what the hell she likes. In 1804, now this is just after the Louisiana Purchase, where the United States purchases around 800,000 square miles of territory from the French Republic. Don Ramon, he actually receives a letter from the royal court asking him to return to Spain. Ooh. He has now been given a position at court instead. Ooh. There's not much going on in Louisiana anymore. Come back to court. We've got much more important and fancy things for you to be doing. So in 1805, Don Ramon and a very pregnant Delphine leave to return to Spain.
Okay.
On their way back, they stop in Havana, Cuba, and Don Ramon is taken horrendously ill. He never recovers from his illness, and he dies in Havana. And this is only days before the birth of their daughter, who is then named Marie Borgia Delphine Lopez de Anguilla de la Calendaria.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of names.
What's her actual name? Like, what do they call her?
They call her Borgita.
Borgita.
Because her grandmother was Borgia.
Was
so
Borgia.
This is like little Borgia. She now plays no part in the story whatsoever. So you can forget all about her.
I like that. When we have kids and it's... We have kids in the story. It's just like, and there were some.
And there were some.
They went away.
Yeah. Now, it's the death of her husband where really some of the legends begin for Delphine. At this point, she is 18 years old. And writers have been sort of keen to give evidence and prove her lifelong wickedness. That this was in her from a child. So her husband hasn't died. He had been murdered. She had killed her husband. She didn't want to go and live in Spain. Poisoned him to be free.
Hey.
There is no evidence for this whatsoever. it's generally believed that, yeah, Don Ramon fell ill, had a heart attack, died.
Yeah.
Either way, her husband is dead, and she has no reason to continue the voyage to Spain, so she returns to New Orleans with her little daughter, and she goes to live with her parents. In 1808, the widow Delphine marries a second time, this time to Jean Blanc. And now he is one of the wealthiest men in the region. He is a banker, he's a merchant, he's involved in the state legislature. Which is a word I can never say.
Oh, I can't say it either, but I like that version of it. Can we just make that word?
Yeah, I'm leaving that in.
Legislature. Yes, it's very long.
Yeah, he is also rumoured, though, to have some underhand dealings in illegal slave trade. And has ties to the pirates Jean-Pierre Lafitte. Operate in the Gulf of Mexico, sort of smuggling and things like that. So yeah, he's in there with some shady characters as well.
Monsieur Blanc is not so lily white, it seems. Wasted on this podcast. Would
really
have been absolutely
wasted.
Great in court.
The wealthy Jean Blanc, he buys his new bride a mansion on Royal Street in the French Quarter. Now, a height of fashionably lovely places. And this is where Delphine is going to entertain and do all the things that members of fancy high society do. Whatever that is, that she's going to do them all.
Greet people.
Yeah, greet people. Yes, send calling cards and
yes,
arrange flowers and such things.
And fan yourself.
And beat slaves.
Less of that. So, arrange your gloves.
Arrange your gloves, exactly.
You arrange your gloves and you find yourself and you hand out calling cards and then you go home and kick people who don't deserve it.
Pretty much. Okay. Now, the couple go on to have four children. You've got Marie-Louise Pauline, Louise-Marie Laure, Marie-Louise Jean, and Jean-Pierre Pauline, which I'm sure didn't get confusing in the slightest. About which one is which, but again, they play no part in the story, so you can forget all that.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad you named them.
Just because it was silly. Why are you all named the same thing? It's really confusing.
Is that, that could be a very lazy approach to parenting, going, you're Marie-Louise, just fuck off.
Just like Marie-Louise 1, Marie-Louise 2, Marie-Louise 3, and you're number 4. Just
you're
number 4.
You're a boy.
Can't have been bothered, Marie-Louise, just number 4. Yet again, things are destined not to last. After 8 years of marriage, Jean Blanc dies. Now again, there is no there's no evidence of anything untoward here, but of course, later writers make suggestions of murder and poison and all sorts of horrendous goings on to get rid of the rich husband.
I'm sure to quote those writers, there may be no evidence of something going wrong, but is there any evidence of it not?
Exactly.
Not going wrong.
Yes, and so there's no evidence that she didn't kill him.
Exactly. So, she's not licking turds.
It's all very true.
You can't prove that thing didn't happen, even though it didn't.
Yeah. But there are contemporary reports that the couple are actually quite happy. They live in a fancy mansion. They throw grand parties. They've got lovely children. They've got piles of cash lying around the place.
Exactly.
What's not to like, really? There's no hardship there. Now, Delphine, she is a widow once more. And after a suitable period of mourning, she continues to throw her lavish parties. She is now an exceedingly wealthy woman. She's got inheritances from two very rich husbands, and her mother and father, who have also since passed and have left her huge inheritances. She is set for like 10 lifetimes. She's
nice.
She's loaded.
Are the suitors lining up by any chance?
She means she at the moment it looks like she's just having a jolly time. Mm. She remains a two times widower. I don't know.
She remains a widow. Dear.
Yes, widowed twice.
I don't think there's a rank.
Do you not have it? I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, there we go. That's why I bring it up. Like,
there's the Black Widow kind of thing. Like, if both of them died, maybe you've killed them. There's not a ranking on widow. You don't get level one widow.
Like one bar on the shoulder, level two, level two bars. Yeah.
Well, you got three husbands.
Three, you
died.
Get a fancy hat.
Yeah. Four, you get a car. Yeah. Exactly. It's just got widow written on the side. She's a widow.
She remains a widow for the next 9 years. And this is until she meets a Dr. Leonard Louis Nicole Lalaurie. Now, Dr. Lalaurie is a handsome young doctor fresh off the boat from France. He's here to set up his own practice. He's going to make it big. He's going to do amazing things. It's all going to be great. He's going to make a name for himself, become famous. I'm going to be a doctor. Great.
I admire his enthusiasm. Yeah. I'm with him all the way.
Yeah. Now, the two meet at various society events and things, and Lalaurie quickly becomes a regular at Delphine's gatherings. Delphine, now, who is in her late 30s at this point, so almost dead.
Crusty.
It's crusty, indeed. Now, she is entirely taken in by the attention of this young gent from France.
He looked past all her wealth.
He is not subtle in his attempts to seduce this highly influential, highly wealthy widow.
Yeah.
But everyone's going, fine, fuck it, you go for it.
Oh, absolutely. He turns up and goes, what level widow is she?
Yeah, exactly. Level two widow. That's loads of money.
Oh, bloody hell.
Then scandal. Scandal hits New Orleans.
Wonderful.
Delphine falls pregnant.
But she is a widow.
She's a widow.
And she is unwed.
She's unwed. And she's pregnant.
Pregnant? No.
Miracles.
I'm sure she's just not swollen from an infection.
No, she's very much pregnant.
Shit.
Yeah, indeed. Not good at all. Yeah, unmarried, pregnant. Oh, the socialites begin to gossip. Oh, what's going on there?
Okay.
How can Delphine, so long the queen of New Orleans society, have been so foolish as to let herself get in such a condition? Such a state. There is only one way to avoid absolute ruin and the downfall of everything she has built up.
Okay.
Really, complete social ostracization. Delphine and Louis are married on the 12th of June, 1825. Only thing to be done. We've got to get married.
I mean, yes, that's very much the fix-it-all solution that everyone had for many years. How pregnant is she?
She's quite pregnant. Quite pregnant. The son is born before the ceremony. So, really pregnant.
She can just say, no, we're engaged. We're good to be married. He can't contain himself.
Yeah. But now she's married. She could go throw a huge party and... You can be forgiven a lot for throwing a great party.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Can we ask you about your pregnancy? Would you like this canapé?
Would you like a lovely canapé?
And a bottle of gin.
Like a Ramos gin fizz?
Oh, yes, there we are.
50 years too early, but okay.
Well, maybe the legend had passed on. You don't know. Okay. Well, that's the thing with our society. It's like we always go, oh, the scandal of being pregnant, out of wedlock. Just marry someone vaguely, throw a big party. No one's got a
problem
with
They're married now. It's all fine.
Yeah.
So it's all fine.
They're like, you have to play by the rules a little bit, but otherwise we really
Don't care, absolutely. Now, the doctor uses Delphine's, now Madame Delphine Lalaurie, to set up his medical practice. It requires a huge effort for him to build up his reputation in this new city, especially as he is reputedly a dreadful doctor. Absolutely awful.
All that enthusiasm from crumbing across the boat. Yes, I'm going to make a name for myself. Yeah. What is a foot?
Yeah, he's now realised that this is why he has travelled across the other side of the world to set up a medical practice, because no one in France will have him. He is frequently away from home, it would seem, and the pair spent most of their time really apart. I mean, he's gotten out of Delphine exactly what he wanted. He's got a big old pile of cash that he can set up his thing, pursue his dreams. I'm going to be a doctor. It's all very good. Now, to fill Delphine's time, she takes on a new project herself. She purchases a property at 1140 Royal Street and proceeds to develop this huge corner plot into one of the most luxurious mansions in all of the city. It is a three-story building, comes with attached slave quarters to the side. So they're not in the main property, but they're nearby need them.
That must be the height of sophistication.
Absolutely.
Oh my God.
I mean,
look
all
at her with
the mod cons, absolutely. Everything going on there.
What kind of mod cons, Nick?
Well, like a nice, they've got like an indoor big old stove thing going on. Or the kitchens are really fancy.
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah, absolutely. They've got all sorts of stuff going on. There's gas indoor lighting, no more candles and any of that sort of stuff. Got gas lights on the wall.
Bloody hell.
It's right fancy, it is. Right fancy.
It's quite fancy. They have one of those machines that wake you up with a cup of tea.
That, I don't know if they're that fancy.
No. Is the machine called a slave?
Yes, well, exactly. The machine's called Bert. Now, when we've looked at other female killers, like Bathory or Sotchkova, there's always seems to be a bit of a trigger, a moment, something that twists them and turns them into the sort of the monster that we all know and love to this day. And it seems to be the same with Delphine. During her third marriage, things start to go awry and take a very nasty turn. Prior to this, she's been sweetness and love and delight. Now, it's not going to go well. It is likely that Delphine's marriage to the doctor is obviously one of absolute necessity. There is no... Well, whatever affection was there has long since waned, really. It was an infatuation to begin with. This younger gent seemed interested in her. She was an older woman, and he was like, very exciting. Had to get married, otherwise scandal and horror. Now it's like, oh, for fuck's sake, what am I going
to
do?
Well, it seems like he's off trying to make his own name for himself. He's got to have his own, trying to have his own business. And this young, sexy man doesn't actually want to hang out with her that much.
Absolutely.
Not hosting all of society.
Yeah. Now there are growing reports of screaming arguments and fights out of the Lalaurie mansion. Now, there are some reports that Leonard has started keeping mistresses around town, using Delphine's money to fund his extracurricular activities and keep these women. When he is confronted about these infidelities, he becomes violent towards Delphine, accusing her of trapping him into marriage with this pregnancy. It's her fault that we had to get married. You're the one who fell pregnant. It's entirely your fault. We had to marry. I don't want to be here. That's why I'm off with all my women.
Yeah, I'm off with all these women. Also, can I have £5?
Can I have £5 for the bus,
many,
please?
Many dollars.
As a result of this harsh treatment that she experiences from her husband, she then starts taking out her own frustrations on the slaves in the house, those who cannot fight back. In 1832, Delphine actually petitions the court for a separation, claiming that her husband has rendered their living together unsupportable, and in the presence of many witnesses, he beat and wounded her in the most outrageous and cruel manner. They separated for a time, but no divorce is coming. they are not able to separate. And eventually the Doctor does move back to Royal Street, but the damage has been done here. Mm. Delphine becomes deeply paranoid that everyone in town is talking about her, talking about the problems she's experienced, which, surprise, they probably were. The gossip runs rife in these sort of these situations. She becomes a much harder and sterner and unpleasant person to be around, really. At home, she's convinced that all her slaves are they're either plotting against her, they're telling her secrets to everyone else in town, they're gossiping behind her back. Everyone is having a good old laugh over poor old Delphine.
And that's going to quietly drive you mad.
Exactly, and exactly what it does. Her punishments become more and more severe for the staff in the house. She starts carrying a whip with her in the house, so she can take instant action whenever something goes, even the slightest bit, awry. Rumours begin to circulate once more about screams and cries coming from her home late at night. Others say that they would see a particular slave in the house for a short time, then they would just disappear. Now, when Delphine is asked about this, and she simply dismisses such chatter, why shouldn't she do what she wants with her slaves? She's got other properties around town. She's got plantations. If she wants to send someone elsewhere to work somewhere else, it's none of their business, none of your business. I can do what I like with my property. In fairness, she can.
I mean, it would be lovely if more people were asking questions at the time. It's probably more gossipy people going like, oh, what's happened to your slaves? They don't really actually care.
On one occasion, a 12-year-old girl, Leah, she is brushing Delphine's hair, and the brush catches in a snag and pulls Delphine's hair. Now, Delphine flies into a rage at this pain caused, and she grabs for her whip. Now, Leah, well aware of what is coming her way, she runs from the room. Now, a screaming Delphine chases the girl through the house, and they end up on the roof, where Leah jumps, or she is pushed, we do not know, into the courtyard 3 stories below. Now, that night, Delphine is witness burying a body in the mansion's grounds. And the authorities are, in fact, alerted. Someone has been buried in the grounds. Well, it was a $300 fine for that.
Oh, God.
$300 fine. And you have to sell 9 of your other slaves, which the next day she bought back.
Ugh. A child has run up to the roof.
Yep. Child has died. Thrown. Jumped or thrown.
Being buried. Fell.
Being buried, supposedly in secret. Has been found out.
You're 300. Not supposed to do
You're
that.
Not supposed to do
you
that.
You need to pay the piper. All right. We need to...
Yeah. There are severe consequences for mistreating your slaves.
Yes.
That's $300, please.
$300 is a lot at the time, but also it's not a human
It's not a lot for her either. Supposedly another slave throws himself out of a 3rd-story window, preferring death to the punishment that he thinks he will receive. And that window is still apparently cemented up to this day. Gossip flies around town. But there's one rumour that she keeps her 70-year-old cook is actually chained to the stove in the kitchen. So she cannot leave. And so anytime Delphine wants something, the cook is there, ready to go.
That doesn't seem logical. I mean, it's a great image.
It is, but what
also that person would die very quickly.
Well, she's got food and she's got water.
Has she?
Yeah, well, yeah, she's fed and she's got access to drinking water and things as much
I think
as anyone
your
else.
Your mind would go pretty quickly. Yeah. I don't think you're serving the best food then and there. I think stuff is going to come out weird.
Absolutely. There's another set of rumours that go around that she actually keeps secret slaves in her basement for her husband to practice Haitian voodoo medicine on. Now, this apparently is in an effort to revive his flagging medical practices. He's going slightly off piece from his training in France and getting into the more local customs. And it's also a rumour that Delphine is acquainted with Marie Laveau, who has now become known as the voodoo queen of New Orleans. And it is Marie who has instructed Delphine and the doctor in the ways of voodoo. And I firmly suspect this is all bollocks.
Yes.
This is utter nonsense.
Because I think I've asked you in the past about Delphine, and the automatic thing is like, oh, the voodoo thing. And then she's confused with Marie Laveau.
Yeah, so they are contemporary of each other.
They are contemporaries.
And to be honest, it may well be that they would have met each other.
Yeah.
Because Marie Laveau, she's a fascinating character in her own right.
Yeah.
And she's quite senior figure in society and things like that, and she goes to these society parties, and she is actually a hair she runs a hair salon, but for society ladies and things like that. So she may well have been known to Delphine. Mm. I can't imagine they would have been friends.
No.
But they may well have known each other.
It does absolutely seem like that's been mashed together.
But that has been absolutely mashed together.
But it's incredible these two women were contemporaries.
They were contemporaries of each
they're
other.
They're both fascinating in their own rights.
And live probably blocks apart. And I'm sure probably would have known of each other, if not known each other.
I'm sure but people would have known about Delphine.
Yeah.
And all of her crazy killingy of the
slaves. But I don't think Marie Laveau was at the house teaching her husband voodoo tricks to help his medical practice.
So much? No.
I think not. Should we have a wee drink? Time for a pause in the craziness.
I think it's time for a drink. I think it's time for us to sesh.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It is the afternoon of the 10th of April, 1834.
Okay.
And suddenly a fire erupts from the kitchen of the Lalaurie mansion. Now, it's suspected that the fire is started by the cook, the one who was chained to the stove. But the flames quickly begin to spread out of control and throughout the service wing. Now, the fire spreads quickly into the mansion building proper, and it becomes obvious from the street that there are flames all over the bloody place where there shouldn't be flames. A crowd begins to gather.
Yes, but there are flames.
There are flames. There's not meant to be flames there.
It's a burning building. This seems like fun. Someone get some toffee apples.
Now, the crowd is surprised to see that Delphine and her daughters were themselves dragging out valuables onto the streets. There's not a slave in sight, not a house servant in sight helping their mistresses evacuate from this burning building.
And certainly no onlookers either.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of onlookers going, "Ooh, that's weird." But
eating popcorn.
Yeah,
we're struggling with that grand piano.
Now there are a few who indeed go, "Right, okay, we need to lend a hand here." One of these people is Judge Jacques Francois Canoge. Now, he is one of the volunteers who respond to the fire, and he runs into this burning building. Now, he knows that some of the slaves have quarters up in the attic. He goes up to make sure that it's empty, that everyone has got out. As he gets to the door, he is stopped by Louis, the doctor, Dr. Lurie. Now, when the judge asks him to unlock the door, Louis reportedly responds, "There are those who would be better employed if they would attend to their own personal affairs instead of officiously intermeddling with the concerns of other people." He gets swiftly pushed out of the way.
The judge goes, the building is on fire.
On fire, mate.
That little speech, lovely. Yeah. Also, you've wasted valuable oxygen.
So,
and also, fuck off.
Fuck off, exactly. The doctor is booted out of the way and the door is broken down.
I bet you that was the doctor later on saying that's what he said. He probably got two words out before the judge knocked him down and went, I don't give a shit,
just
mate.
Just shut up, man.
Hush you.
But as the rescuers go up into attic, they are horrified by what they find.
Oh, God.
Now, the New Orleans Bee, the city newspaper.
Sorry, wait a minute. Let's just linger on that.
The New Orleans Bee.
The Bee?
Bee.
The is
bee
it buzzing with news?
It's buzzing with news.
Oh, my God.
They describe the scene as follows. Seven slaves, more or less horribly mutilated, were seen suspended by the neck, with their limbs apparently stretched and torn from one extremity to the other. Language is powerless and inadequate to give a proper conception of the horror which a scene like this must have inspired. We shall not attempt it, but leave it rather to the reader's imagination to picture what it was. Now, it was obviously terrible, but also vague enough that people could really make up their own mind as to what was up there. What's going on?
It's a masterpiece in journalism because this is enough for you to be really horrified, but we'll let you make up the rest.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you make up the worst thing that you can think of in your head. That's what was up there.
Good Lord. Now, I have seen American Horror Story Coven.
Yep.
Not all of it, actually. I need to finish it. It's one of those where I go, it's brilliant. It's one of the best. But that scene has never left me.
Yeah, it's not pleasant.
It is recreated in the series of going up and there are the slaves up there before they are discovered and set free or helped. No, just Delphine going and visiting them.
Mm.
But that passage, not heard that before, and I'm thinking of far worse things than I saw on the screen.
It's a brilliant bit of writing. It's a brilliant description. People do believe that seven slaves were found chained in the attic. They were on the edge of starvation. They were emaciated. They were weak from being chained up and locked away with no food. They had wounds and scars from being beaten and whipped, and there is no doubt that people have suffered horrendous mistreatment and abuse at the LaLaurie Mansion. A book that is written in 1946, called The Ghost Stories of New Orleans, seems to be the first written account of many of the more horrific stories that surround Madame LaLaurie. Now, in this book, the author writes about how slaves were found naked, chained to the wall, eyes gouged out, fingernails removed. Others had their mouths filled with their excrement and then their lips sewn shut.
Ooh.
There is an account of how one man had his intestines pulled out and wrapped around his waist. There is not a single source from the time that corroborates any of this.
When was that written?
It was written in 1946.
Interesting.
There is absolutely nothing of the time that corroborates any of those stories.
I will come back to this, and it's a wild thing, but okay. I will come back to this.
A later book written in 1998 goes on to make even more gruesome claims. Now, conveniently, the author of this book was also the operator of a New Orleans ghost tour at the time, and
yes,
saw a big old bump in business when this book came out. It's from this book that we get the story of the woman with her skin peeled off in a long circular pattern, making her look like a caterpillar. The slave woman who had her limbs broken and reset into odd angles so she walked across the floor like a crab.
What?
That's taken into American Horror Story.
It is? That particular I missed that.
Yeah. There are no credible sources for any of this actually ever happened, but they sell ghost tours.
You can say anything,
you can say what you like. It is all bollocks.
Who are you going to libel? Why would you go that far-fetched?
Why not?
Wouldn't more ghost tours do that, though? I mean, I've been on a fair few ghost walks. I've never heard stories like this.
Mm.
And you could say whatever you liked. Why would Delphine... Why are there such ludicrously lurid stories? It had to come from somewhere.
Well, absolutely. They're based on this kernel of truth. These slaves were held in the attic and they were abused. Some of them, they were whipped so much it looked like they were flayed and things because they had been beaten and whipped so harshly.
Such a horrific
thing.
Sight.
And also that newspaper didn't help. We're going to leave it up to your imagination as to what all
true.
The terrible things happened. There were no written accounts of
about
any of
was.
Those things. Yep, there were seven people up there, emaciated. The spiked collars thing seems to be true.
They were wearing
a collar so they can't look down and things like that. They've got to have their head held up at all times. And yes, they were starved. What is frustrating about books like that is that they actually take away from the actual suffering that people actually really did go through.
Yeah.
Was that not horrifying enough? Well, to make up this story about a crab woman walking across the attic?
Wouldn't that be hilariously like weird and creepy? So, it's like, no, people were
but
being
people,
killed.
People, yeah, exactly. Things were actually horrifying. The crowd is actually outraged at the suffering of those they found in the attic. And this is a crowd that is actually relatively comfortable with slavery and things like that. And for this to be, to cause outrage, it must have been fairly horrendous to warrant such a reaction. Now, during the chaos and seeing the visceral reaction of the crowd, Delphine and Louis, they take their carriage and they flee. They escape the city. They go down to the docks and they board a schooner and they get over to Mobile in Alabama. They intend to lay low for a bit until things calm down. Then they'll come back.
Oh, we're sorry. Here's $300.
Well, yeah.
And we won't do it again, I promise.
People
will get over the horrible things, but things don't calm down. People don't get over it.
No.
And a few days later, on the 15th, a mob of nearly 4,000 people storms the Lurie mansion.
Nice.
And actually just ransacks it. It is pretty much ripped to pieces. All there's left are the walls. Everything else is just trashed.
That seems like we're outraged by this. Also, she's left a lot of nice stuff. We don't approve of any of this. I'm taking her whole entire pots and pans set.
Yeah, I think there's a fine line between ransacking and looting.
Yeah. Well,
so, the Lurie slaves, they are taken to the authorities and they are meant to sort of recount their experiences. But then also they're held in the local jail for people to come and see the terrible things that have been done to them. So if people don't believe what they're reading in the papers, people don't believe these tales, they can come and see it for their own eyes about the horrors from the Lurie attic. Several weeks after the ransacking, the New Orleans Advertiser writes that two of the rescued slaves has since died of their injuries. Adam, we understand that in digging in the yard, bodies have been disinterred, and the condemned well having been uncovered, others, particularly that of a child, were found. Now, realizing it is entirely impossible for her now to return to New Orleans, there's no way she's getting back into society, getting back her old position. Delphine, she leaves Alabama and she makes her way to France.
Oh.
And she ends up in Paris.
Okay.
Still with a sizable amount of her fortune in tow. And there she lives in comfort. It's not quite the place in society as once she was. She still lives a damn comfortable
yes.
life in Paris. She's got servants and lovely apartments and all this. And she lives there for the rest of her days. The stories did not travel, did not follow her. And she lives there quite comfortably. She dies in France on December the 7th, 1842. Some people write about in a boar hunting accident.
Oh, okay.
So she's out in the forests in outside Paris
hunting boar.
As you do. And she is killed in an accident.
What kind of accident?
Well, we do not know. We don't know. And it's only some people think it's, yeah, she fell off a horse.
She fell onto a boar.
Was she charged at by a boar or was she shot by someone accidentally? I thought you were a boar, Madame Lurie. You got a head blasted off.
Heads on the wall somewhere in France.
Now, it is thought that after her death, her children actually arranged for her body to be returned to her beloved New Orleans. In the late 1930s, an old cracked copper plate is unearthed in the St. Louis Cemetery in New Orleans that reads Madame Lurie, Marie Delphine McCarty. But to this day, the remains of Madame Lurie have never been found. And that is her story. A lot of bollocks, a lot of fact. It's difficult to know where one begins and the other ends.
Oh my God, Delphine. Oh, great story. I didn't know that we don't know what happened to her.
No, no one knows. Some people think she died in Paris and she's buried somewhere in Paris. Don't know where.
Yeah, fair enough.
Other people think, she was spirited back to New Orleans and this was her grave marker. Or was it, did they just put a memorial type thing there with this plaque was put up just to sort of memorialize her, but her body remains elsewhere? No one knows.
The few people memorializing are going, well, we're going to put this plaque. None of us condone this. We're going to bury that under cover of darkness. What an incredibly mad woman. And a great story, as you said, that there are so many women that we've covered in the past, and recently we've done a little run of bitch women who beat the hell out of their servants. But with her, there's so much folklore.
There's so much, exactly. There's so much folklore, so much legend around her.
Yes, such legend that she is the most macabre figure, and she absolutely did terrible, terrible things and was a murderer and tortured people. But
so did a lot of people back then.
So did a lot of people. Well, we don't, you know, we can say anything about any of the people we've covered, because really, over the passage of time, you can go, we can write what the hell we want. No one's going to check it. Even the cases that we've covered that actually have a lot of resources, you still have people going, well, is there any actual evidence of this? Like, well, actually, yeah, in this case there is. With her, it's going to be a lot of hearsay, a lot of gossip from the locals. She definitely did terrible things.
Oh, yes.
But this level of torture and those stories, they have to have come from somewhere. That's the thing.
I think they're coming from a crazy imagination.
Well, if they did come from a crazy imagination, why don't we hear this all the time? With all of the murderers that we've covered, some of the most fantastical and, like, you know, really famous murderers, why don't we have that? Why don't we have all of this strange, macabre folklore that is associated with Delphine with everyone else? So that's what makes me think it's come from somewhere. Some people saw some terrible, terribly weird shit.
I'm not sure about the weird shit. That's the thing. I'm not convinced. Yes, she did horrendous things, absolutely. Were they not horrendous enough that they had to be embellished and made to seem much grander than they were? So okay, this isn't macabre enough. This isn't
seven slaves in the attic who are wearing spiked collars, who are being, like, pinned to the wall. We don't have that a lot around there. I wouldn't be surprised if she had really indulged up there.
Maybe.
And had done terrible, terrible things to people. I don't believe in the crab woman.
I mean, there's another story that there were slaves found with holes cut in their head and wooden spoons that she used to stir their brains.
I mean, it's possible. It's possible. And the thing I was going to say earlier, and I'm going to say it now, and it's going to make us feel a bit shit. These things happened during the Holocaust. The most horrific, unimaginable things were done to human beings, and it is on record.
Yeah, people just do because dreadful they could, things to each other.
Because these are people in a position of power who saw human beings as nothing, has saw them as nothing but things to experiment on. And those reports, that's why you asked for the dates, is that you have just come out of a period of time where
those things are fresh in the mind at that
point. Those things literally happened. Maybe everyone's going, well, if they happened then, it's absolutely reasonable that someone would have done that before. Not reasonable, but reasonable in the sense of, like, yeah, it could have happened. As lurid as it sounds, and as indulgent as it sounds to kind of go, oh, let's, like, make a whole American Horror Story kind of scenario around it, it's very possible that she did do some really messed up stuff with those people. It was enough that people were commenting on it.
Well, we will never know for sure.
Ooh, I think that documentary American Horror Story proves a lot. Again, the women spurned women.
Yeah.
Women who are not getting enough attention. People who were not people getting enough attention. Yeah. That's not a nice house.
It's not a nice house. I mean, it was really bizarre. You read about it. Nicolas Cage bought it.
Oh, my God, he did.
Because the mansion still exists, and it's now a museum and tours and things.
It exists.
Yeah, it's still there. I'm not sure if it's open, but it still
it's
exists.
Still there,
but
it's still there.
At one point, it was a museum. I don't know if it still is anymore. Yeah, but at one point, yeah, Nicolas Cage bought it. Then he was forced to sell it because he ran out of money.
and then Nicolas Cage made all those weird films. Mad story of Delphine. Well, what do you think, people? Do you know the story of Delphine Lalaurie? Do you know more legends and more tales from New Orleans and from the area? Do you live locally? Do you know stuff that hasn't been covered by other people that is still whispered about in the streets today? Do you believe 100% of what Kathy Bates portrayed on American Horror Story? I know we keep referencing it.
Yes,
it's very, very good.
She, in fact, was ahead for most of her life.
She was ahead
in the box. So.
Also, can we shout out to Angela Bassett in that as well? Yeah. Like, oh my God, so good.
I might have to watch that again now, possibly.
Oh, yeah. Let's all watch that. The Axeman of New Orleans.
He's in there as well. Great.
Great series. If you've seen it, just weigh in about how much you love that. But yes, what do you think of the story? What do you think? Do you think there is truth in the really quite ludicrous stories that are shared? But we have seen that these things can happen. So do you buy it? Do you think, nah, it's convenient to pin this on a woman?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she did dreadful things. No question.
Oh, yeah.
Are they quite as legendary as folklore will portray?
Tell us what you think. Jump on the comments of this episode, of wherever you listen to it, and any of the social media channels that you follow. Send us suggestions of more stories that we can cover. Please come and follow us on TikTok, on any social media channels, and find us on Patreon, where we have new episodes every single week. But most importantly, you must mix up if you have...
if you've got a spare half an hour.
Mix up a...
a Ramos gin fizz.
Because it's delicious.
It's very good, but my God, it's hard work. So if you have small children who have a lot of energy, get them to shake it for hours. Shake it, shake it, shake it. So yeah, the recipe and the detailed method will be out on Friday. If you can, give it a go.
It's
delicious. Send us your pictures. I want to see how far you get your foam to rise.
Way.
Way.
Yeah, it's a delicious
it's
drink.
Good, it's a good drink. It's a good drink, and it's a fun one to play around with.
I would love to have had a second one. I couldn't have put you through
that. I haven't got the strength.
Normally, I'd be all over that for some sort of gym fitness thing, but I'm injured and lazy as well. Mix it up if you can. Share videos.
Yeah.
Share video. How high can you get the foam? That's your challenge for the week. And please, if you haven't already, leave us a review on Apple iTunes and tell all your friends about the wonder that is the Poisoner's Cabinet. Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the Poisoner's Cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember... your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Oh.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.